Well, good morning, everybody. Today's Tuesday, October 29th. I think it's after 10 o'clock, so we'll go ahead and start the ADA board meeting for this day. We'll start with a roll call of board members.
Mr. Wilkins.
Here.
Mr. Pulaski.
Here.
Ms. Nygaard.
Here.
Mr. Hughes.
Here.
Commissioner Bell.
Here.
Mr. Dick.
Here.
Mr. Pruse.
Here.
Present.
Great. Thank you, Fran. And then now, how about a roll call for staff and the public?
Okay. Ted Leonard. Ada.
Ms. Anderson. Ada.
Kirsten Rupik. Ada.
Mark Davis, Ada.
Jennifer Haldane, Ada, and Ada. Sherry Deverson, Ada. Felicia Under, Ada.
Nick Sprohan, Ada.
Jeff Cranwatt, Ada. Michael Lamb, Ada.
Quinn Kempinen, Ada. And now for the public.
Mayor Luke Hopkins, Fairbanks, North Suburbs.
Okay, who else is on the phone?
John Davies, Assembly, Fairbanks, North Suburbs.
And the last person who beeped in?
Mark Erner, Western Financial Group, Ada.
Brian Bjorkus, Department of Law.
Jeff Logan.
Pete Hans,
Rick Adcock, NWH.
Chris Brown, NWH.
Jeff Kuhn, NWH.
And we had some more staff walk in.
Ontario, ADA.
Great, thank you, Brent. And before us, we have an agenda, so I'll look for a motion for approval.
So moved.
Second.
Any opposed? All right. Public comments, item number 5. Anybody online would like to make any public comments?
Yes, thank you. This is Mayor Luke Hopkins. I ask that I be able to address the board. Mayor Luke Hopkins, serving Sonoma Suburb.
Go ahead, Mayor.
Thank you very much. I have a couple of points, and I take it that the board was apprised of the letter that Diane Hutcherson, as presiding officer of the Fairbanks North Scarborough, and myself as mayor, submitted to Ted Leonard, but also copied the Ada Board of Directors in terms of statements that, and position that we wanted to ensure that you were aware of in terms of the municipal gas utility that was enabled by adoption of an ordinance and the effect that that has in the Fairbanks North Scarborough. So I hope you've received that at this point. There was an issue recently concerning the governor asking for the two utilities to move forward and work on the settlement because it's impacting the timeline of the project, in so many words. And I hope that the ADA board has a full understanding that the volumes of gas that are needed and actions that are required to keep this project moving forward on the timeline are not in jeopardy of actions that are in relationship to the RCA decision. If I'm incorrect, I'd certainly like to hear that, but from the information I have gained, that's not my understanding. So I certainly hope that with the ADA board discussions, it does not delve down into the lack of ability for this project to keep moving forward on the fast timeline that it does need to be able to deliver gas in the winter of 2015-2016, which I hope is still on the schedule, and I'll certainly probably hear some of that later. The other issue moves on from the timeline in terms of what it's costing our community. We all know that. It's old news, but it's still current, and we continue to have pressure on residents trying to find ways to lower their individual costs for space heating needs. And, of course, we see that with continued actions of wood burning that, you know, I believe that, you know, stove sales continue, and I think we're actually adding stove units to the community, which, you know, again, will impact that PM2.5 aspect, and all that relates back to the cost of gas as it gets out to the residents. I want to thank Nick for, you know, your staff member, Nick, who was able to come up here yesterday to Fairbanks and our borough offices and ask some questions about conversion, because we are in looking at those conversion factors. About 20 days ago, the Ada senior staff, I would call executive staff, and the board, some board members came before the Fairbanks Austell Borough Assembly, and I was present at that. And I appreciate the ability to ask a series of questions. But I do want to raise the issue that it's been 20 days since we had had an agreement that the actual map files, the data files for the mapping of the remaining service area potentials were to be delivered in week. I have not received those yet. I understand, you know, speaking with Gene Terrio, he said there were a couple of small items that had to be addressed. My point is that I would put those working documents so that we can actually look at those and see what is possible out there from a Fairbanks Northstar Borough. As the chair said, that we do need to get working on the right-of-way issues, and that is also part of it. The other item is that a model was committed to be delivered. I think it's an MEI model of optimization, and I understand that has been handed to IGU, but when I was asking for it, I was certainly hoping that the Fairbanks North Star Borough government would receive that, meaning either my office or the IT department. That is also an action that, you know, 20 days I think is long enough, and I would ask that the board direct the staff to please send these two items forward, that there was, what I understand, a commitment to deliver them. In short, as you, the Ada board members, look towards a action in possibly mid to late November on adopting an interior energy project by vote of the board, I certainly hope that there's adequate time to review this project to ensure that your understanding of what an LNG project is, because you're the ones making the decision. I know that I have a limited knowledge of what an LNG project has to contain in terms of components, in terms of take or pay, in terms of commitments of utilizing the commodity are critical, so critical to what it's going to cost in our community at what I would call burner tip, and the effects of how fast the conversion happens. So with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions, and thank you for this opportunity once again to be able to comment to you as a board.
Thank you, Mary Hopkins. Are there any comments or questions from the board? Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Gary Wilkin. Mayor, at the outset of your comments, you said, I want to make sure the Ada board is fully aware of something. And would you expand on what you said? Because I didn't understand that first opening paragraph, please.
Of that, the actions of, at the start of my conversation, were in relationship to the letter that Diane Hutcherson and myself sent in terms of the Fairbanks community through the actions of the elected officials and the powers that have been transferred to the assembly have created a municipal gas utility, and that is the representative for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And I certainly hope that the Ada board in their actions in relation to how it rolls out, how the project rolls out in the community, that the interior gas utility is at the table, so to speak. It's at the assembly table. They are the representatives that the assembly said we are them.
Okay. All right. I guess if it's as simple as that, is there something specific that would tell you, Mayor, that we're not aware of that?
there's components of the letter that, transparency that we hope that is transmitted to the community in terms of, what is occurring as components of the Interior Energy Project are brought forward. I think that Diane and I, our reactions to when the ADA executive staff and some members were here before the assembly and other community elected leaders, there was a lot of information that didn't seem clear. We had a whole series of questions, and that's what prompted the letter, is that are we getting answers that are clear enough, that are definitive enough for the community to be ready to accept this project as we certainly hope it will roll out?
Well, I think it would help me, Mayor, and the board, because we're a late board, as we've spoken earlier. It would help me if there were specific questions that you wanted to have answered, those questions be brought forward. The letter is very much appreciated, and I took that letter as an offer of help and an offer of just, hey, don't forget us. We're here to work this project on behalf of the people of the borough. So the letter is very much appreciated, but it's general, and I didn't read in there anywhere about the board not being aware of our role. I think we're very much engaged, and if there are specifics, I'd sure like to know what they are, and I've asked you that before, and I'll ask you again, because that's the way the lay board can get at this, is to, because we're not living and breathing this, if we have specific questions that need to be answered, we'll get those answers. And let me then roll to my next question. You had two questions, and Mr. Terry was here, or for the chair, whomever should answer. So I'd like to follow up on your comment about the map files being available and where those are, and then the model, the MEI model, where that is currently, because I think those are two specific questions that you've asked, and I hope we can get an answer. So thank you.
Yes.
I would comment on that, Gary, that I'd look for the group under the, unless you want to do it now, Ted, under the update of the project. But
it's up to you, Chair. I'm sure that Gene could answer in probably two sentences for that question.
All right, go ahead, Gene.
Thank you. For the map file, there were some corrections that we needed to make on how a six-year build-out would take place in the community. The initial map that was produced by staff, we really pushed staff to get something out before a particular person went on vacation, and found out that initial year build-out in the North Pole area in particular didn't show on the map. It didn't capture the city limits of North Pole, where the first year build-out would actually take place. So we needed to make an adjustment there before putting anything out that might suggest to whoever looks at the map exactly what area would get service in year one, year two, year three. So we just wanted to be very careful. I think that correction has been made at this point, so we can send that out. With regard to the MEI modeling, it is correct. We did get that model sent to both IGU and FNG. We offered to walk them through the model. In fact, that go-to meeting, a video conference took place with IGU, I believe, yesterday, to walk them through what is a fairly robust model to make sure they understood all the cells that could be turned on, turned off. We asked for them to make comments for suggested changes to the model, and we wanted to incorporate those changes before the model went out to a larger distribution. So I think that, as the mayor indicated, IGU is acting as an agent on behalf of the local government. We hope to get their technical advice and make some modifications to the model before it goes out to a larger distribution.
Thank you. Gary?
So, Mr. Chair, if I could ask Gene. So, Gene, in regard to the map files, can you give a date certain that that will be given to the parties involved?
Yeah. I think we're ready to send them.
Okay, so today or tomorrow?
Yes.
Okay. And then, Mayor, so by your comment this morning, are you asking that you be added to the distribution list that now includes FNG and IGU?
Yes, thank you for that opportunity to have that done. You know, I'm certainly sure that if items come to IGU and they're not held as not for distribution, that would also work. You know, if you want me as my, you know, this office to receive those documents also, that's fine. I don't get to see the pieces of discussion and sit down and look at what happened, you know, what is being proposed for solutions for our community. I think that's the piece that, you know, and I say I myself, there's, you know, a conference table here in my office so that, you know, we the community and leaders in the community can see what's being done. However that works, that's the point that I raised 20 days ago and raising again now. So thank you for the ability to hopefully get those data files sent back to the IT people.
So they're currently going to the IGU. So that system is all right with you?
Yeah, but I, you know, I'm not aware that it may be that this model that was just looked at and map files haven't been delivered. Okay, I just heard that there were reasons why, but the model that we asked for earlier and that we were going to be delivered, it was not for, you know, not for distribution in the review that they just had. So, you know, 20 days has gone by. I'm just trying to get that timeline when it might be available to have a couple of us here in the community sit down and look at it.
Gene, when was the model delivered to IGU?
I think about a week and a half, last Monday.
So a week ago.
Yes.
A week ago today, or yesterday. Okay. So Mayor, I just want to be clear here because I don't think there's any effort to exclude the mayor's office. I just think that as we started this conversation, IGU is there to represent the people of the borough, and I think this board expects that IGU is carrying the water for the borough, and I think that's what staff thinks. And so, personally, I would like to see IGU and FNG be the those that receive the information, whether it's confidential or not. But if the mayor's office wants to get involved in that, then I don't. I'll leave it up to staff whether that's a problem or not. But I just want to make sure you don't feel like the mayor's office is being excluded to the detriment of the people of the borough.
If I may follow up.
Go ahead, Mayor.
Well, you know, again, when I spoke with one of the IGU board members this morning about, you know, there's a teleconference call-in on public comment, have we IGU seen the model? And they said yes, but they were told that they weren't able to distribute it or to hold it. And so that's the point. If it's not ready to go out anywhere, that's one piece. If it's being given to IGU so that others can talk about it, then maybe there's some confusion on the fine line here.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor, for being there this morning. And, Mr. Chairman, thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Are there any other public comments?
This is John Davies, Fairbanks, Minnesota Borough Assembly.
Go ahead, Mr. Davies.
Thank you. And I thank the board for this opportunity to present some of my concerns. Following up on the comments that the mayor made, I have that board member Wilkins requested some specific questions. I have two specific concerns and then a general comment, and I hope they'll be fairly quick. The first has to do with the incentive to get the last mile of build-out done. And we had some discussion when the ADA staff and some board members were here in front of the assembly on this topic, but I'm still not concerned, convinced that we have an answer to how that's going to happen. The problem, of course, is that we need to get the build-out to go to as many people as possible for both the economic and the PM 2.5 concern. So that means that we need to get the build-out to go to the entire high and medium density areas. And if this were a simple market solution problem, it would have, you know, it wouldn't be a concern. But it's obvious that it's not, and that's why we have public money involved in the process of both the distribution and the conversion plan on the North Slope. So given that there's public money involved, then the question is, how is it that we're going to structure the assistance to the distribution in such a way that the last mile gets built out? And my concern is that we'll put the public money up front in the areas that are the lowest hanging fruit, the areas that are economically the easiest, and then when it comes time to do the last mile, we'll have to go to private dollars in the bond market, and that will be very expensive. And my view is that that's exactly backwards. It needs to be the other way around. And at a very minimum, I would hope that when we do the incentives for the distribution with public money, that at least we have an inverse relationship between the density of the area being served and the dollars per mile distributed. So it gets into a fairly technical area. We've had some conversation with staff about that, but I just want the board to be aware that that is a specific area that a number of us on the assembly have some concerns about, and we don't believe that there's an answer that's satisfactory yet about how that last mile gets incentivized. That's issue number one. Issue number two has to do with the conversion incentive, and which is an issue that's inside the meter now, so it's not part of the distribution. It's not generally thought as part of the distribution problem, but everybody recognizes that the whole enterprise is conditioned on how fast conversion happens, and some of that is going to be determined by an individual homeowner's economic determination about whether it makes sense for them to hook up for gas, even if it's available or not. And if it's going to cost a homeowner $10,000 to $20,000 to switch out their oil boiler for one that can deal with gas or both, then it's going to be a difficult problem. And so there needs to be, and there is some thinking going on about how do we incentivize this conversion. The borough has some, we have some legislative priorities that we are designing and have voted to put forward. We've had some discussions internally about that, and we are very appreciative of the fact that staff member Zvoniak came up and talked to us a little bit about some of the thoughts that Ada has now about that. How do we solve that problem? And we're concerned that when we heard this discussion in front of the assembly 20 days ago, we heard that Ada was working on that, and our concern at that time, and Assemblymember Catherine Dodge and myself wrote to Nick and Ted and said, you know, we see that you're working on this. We'd like to be part of that conversation because we, A, have some expertise on that, and we have some thoughts about that, and we're concerned about how do we get that easy financing to happen so that homeowners will be incentivized to make that conversion decision sooner rather than later. So that's issue number two that I want the board to be aware of, is that there is this conversation going on, but there are no answers yet about how we're going to do this conversion incentive. And it's a tricky one because it's not really part of the distribution issue, and it's inside the meter, so it's private financing and all that kind of thing. But it's very important to the success of the overall enterprise that people decide to convert sooner rather than later. So those are the two issues, the incentive of the last mile and the conversion incentive. And I just would leave you also with the reminder that the overall test from Fairbanks North Star Borough point of view on this whole project is based on 3 points. Is that we want, and the 3 points are that we want to get the lowest cost, and that means at the burner tip. That means individual homeowner making a decision to do this. It doesn't matter if it's cheap to the street and it costs a lot of money to get into their house. The burner tip is the issue. It has to be the lowest cost possible to the homeowner that's going to make that decision. And then the second thing is it has to be to the most number of people. That includes all of high and medium density areas. We need to make sure that we have a plan that can get to all of those people, so that we solve both the economic and the air quality issues in the borough. And the last one, of course, is, as you're as you're aware, is it has to be as soon as possible. There's a crisis up here in terms of the cost of energy and in terms of the air quality, and we need to be solving this problem as quickly as we can. And I appreciate the board's attention to that. I know that they believe that, and that they've been working on that. But I just want to remind you that those are the three tests overall, and when we're looking at evaluating any part of this project, those are the three tests that we use up here. Is it getting to the going to be the lowest cost to the most number of people and as soon as possible? And I appreciate all the work the board's doing on that and the staff. I know that many good people are dedicated to making this problem solved, and if it were easy, it would have been done, obviously. So thanks for taking on this task on our behalf.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Any comments from the board? Okay, seeing none. Is there anybody else? Public comments? Any item before our agenda?
Mr. Chair, one comment. When we had our meeting up in Fairbanks a few weeks ago, the mayor was good enough to bring forward a suggestion about how we structure our meetings. Mm-hmm. And I just want to let him know that you're working on that and that we're going to talk a little bit about that. And so that issue has not been cast aside. Mayor, we're going to talk a bit about that at the board level and see if we can restructure how we do public comment at our meetings. So that's pending. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, public comments are closed. Item number six, new business. So A shows an update on the IEP. Shed, I'll look to you and Gene for that.
Oh, you bet. Thank you. And I'd ask Mark Davis to come up, the person in overall charge of the project. And I guess, do you have a, would it be easier to work off the copy or have everyone's, it's a chair?
Yeah, we've got people, this part of the people facing this, so I think we work off the copy, right? But we can advance it for the audience. Okay. You got a comment, everyone?
Chair.
You want my chair?
No,
sir.
We need to move that screen.
Come over here. So, very again, so recommend is Mark Davis from Deputy Director Ada. This is an update on the Interior Energy Project. So this isn't tracking a hard copy yet. Okay, very good. All right, you double sided it. We're saving paper. All right. So again, just to go over the package of SB 23, and we have the CES financing, which would be a loan of 3%. We have the 57.5 capital budget appropriation, which we were told to put into the project without an immediate rate of return. And we have $150 million worth of CES bonds that would be issued through ADA, but they actually would be CES bonds, and they would float with the market. Those have the moral obligation safe, so that would float at a really good rate. The idea still is a 9 BCF North Slope liquefaction plant. The reason is we still think 9 BCF allows us to meet the demand at the initial part of the project, but allow for penetration into the other areas. And also, though, it works with the possibility that there will be either a pipeline or alternative source of gas within a reasonable period of time. So all the plans for the plant, however, call for an expansion if needed, and so that's been engineered in that 9 BCF. But it's kind of a balance.
But the 9 should last us how long?
It should last till about 217 to 218, and that's precisely when we'll know if one of the pipelines is coming. Then the expansion is a good question. Expansion could take place either at the slope, or there may be gas can be brought from the South Central. But if you build a smaller plant, you might run into a quick conversion and run out of gas. If you build a bigger plant, you might develop a stranded asset, and that would go into the rate, could go into the ratepayers, and that would be not a good idea. So this, it's a balance. The engineers have worked pretty hard on it. I think it does work. And then we, as you know, working on the gas distribution system, and that's what Gene and Kirk Warren and all the AA staff have been doing. As you heard, we've sent an MEI model, pretty elaborate model, right, Gene? Mm-hmm. It's only type, you know, it's a lot of work to them about how they might work on distribution. AA has worked on the GIS data and laid out where the pipes might go on a street by street basis. And all that information has been provided to the IGU, which, as Mayor Hoffman said, is the representative of the Fairbanks North Shore Borough. The other reason to send it to the IGU, just for the record, is the IGU was formed with the concurrence of the City of North Pole and the City of Fairbanks because they needed to transfer their powers to the borough in order to form a public utility. So the IGU is really a creation of all three governments and therefore is an appropriate representative. So again, the overview is the plant on the slope, and critical to that, underneath is the private partner. SB 23 was structured from the outset as being a public-private partnership. It was not structured so that ADA would build the plant, or it would be a state asset. The idea was to use the SEDS financing. The bulk of it is a loan, and the SETS statute provides us, ADA, to work on energy projects. It's a major improvement to our quiver of tools. Obviously, one of our board members and I worked on that more hours than I'd like to remember. But we're putting it in place. And the SETS loan at 3% is very attractive money in today's market. And so we're trying to hook up with private partners, and we're in intense negotiations with private companies right now. The next thing, of course, is to truck it. It's 509 miles. It's used the Dalton Highway. We have talked to DOT repeatedly, and we're still in conversation with DOT. And we intend to set up in the near future a technical meeting with the trucking industry and DOT to work on that segment. But again, ADA will not truck the gas. We've talked to each of the utilities and users. They'd all like to contract with a different trucking company. But we want to make sure that the pricing is within the scope of the Interior Energy Project, you know, that the gas gets delivered at burner tip price, as Mr. Davies said. So we're working on that. And we've hired a company named Prolog from Canada to do a model, but we're going to continue to stress test that model. As far as the highway itself, it's all been open most of its time. It's rarely closed, and it can handle the number of trucks that we need to use. Again, then we go to the distribution. Gene, did you want to take over that?
Sure. In the local community, then you've got the components of the delivery of the LNG into storage for the community, the sizable storage, significant cost factor for that component. Before the resource has been regassed, put into a pipe distribution system, and delivered for industrial, like industrial and residential consumption. As we discussed, we've got a number of things going on recently. There has been a refinement of a supply optimization model, and what we're trying to do there is look at how we blend together the capability of the plant to throttle up and down, produce more resource in the cold of winter, less in the summer because there's less demand, match that up with storage in the community so you can assure that you can meet everybody's needs on a yearly basis, and do so in such a way that, again, you try and avoid any investment in the component that might lead more to a stranded asset in the future, and keep the overall costs down. And so it's a blend between the plant capacity and the storage. The model that was delivered a little over a week ago to both FNG and IGU has a number of fields in it that you can ramp up and ramp down, turn on and turn off, stress it with a cold snap in the month of January, plus a road closure or a plant shutdown. And how would the opportunities need to be met? Would you have enough in storage? Would you be able to source gas from another source? And one of the things that was suggested is that model needs to also capture potential interruptible customers in the community. For example, all of the elementary schools, the remaining elementary schools in the core of the Fairbanks area are being piped, and there was a capital appropriation for them to convert to natural gas sooner rather than later. When the schools do that, they always maintain a fuel oil component, like the capability of switching back. In addition, the hospital, the correctional facilities, a number of other state facilities. We have now met with the facilities operators for the state of Alaska so that we can get an estimate of the number of those facilities that can convert, which of those facilities will maintain that dual fuel capability, and then also build into the model that if you had a cold snap and an emergency, and those facilities, those governmental facilities, make the call to switch back to fuel oil, how long does that let your commodity in storage then stretch to make sure that you can meet all of the needs of the residential customers? And in this model, although we anticipate that some residential customers will have dual fuel or capability, we are not counting on any residential user to have to switch back. We're not building that into the model at all. So we're shooting for a system that will be able to supply all of their needs, even in those situations, cold snap and interruption in supply. As you can see on the slide, we delivered that model. We want the feedback. We have received some feedback from FNG and IGU, and we'll make some final adjustments in that model. We did set up video conferences so that we could have the gentleman that built the model, he is actually a consultant in Georgia, could actually walk them through the process so that they fully understood how the cells could be turned off and on and the model could be stressed. And then also to be able to discuss their ideas for modifications. So we hope to have those modifications made soon, and we'll get that corrected model or modified model back to them, and also supply a copy to the mayor's office. On the mapping, you see an independent view of the six-year build-out. So not relying on either of the proposed utilities, but just in our view, what is a six-year build-out likely to look at? So that we can then go to the individual grid parts of the map and say, okay, in year two, if we're going to expect the build out to cover these map sections, how many residential customers are there? How many light industrial customers are there? How many miles of pipe is that going to take? Match that up with then how quickly we anticipate the potential customers to convert so that we can do a computation on the amount of commodity that will be needed in each of those years. And if the plant and the storage sized correctly to meet that the demands of those the build out. And then
is there any relationship, this model that you're building for the build out, and then what actually would happen with the utilities, whether it's one or two utilities up there, is will there be any tie to your model versus what the actual utility does?
I think there will need to be once we find out exactly what the utility structure is going to be. That might dictate where you place storage or how many storage units you start off with, and that will have an impact.
So once the map is given, the theoretical model build-out map is out there for the public to look at, what happens if the utility wants to do something different?
Well, and we're very mindful of that, that this is our view of a potential mock build-out, but we're not ultimately the ones that are going to be doing that. However, we try to get buy-in from FNG and IGU that our model is based on reasonable assumptions. It's a reasonable estimate of the number of miles of pipe, and that it will be fully utilized. They will be able to utilize it because our view is that once that call on who the utility or utilities are going to be serving what territory, we will have already turned everything over for them to use, or we will turn everything over for them to use.
And Gene, could I make Chair very quickly mention that once this plan gets out and we do start negotiating with the utilities, our monies that we would do through the bonds could have ties based on what the board directs management to do. So as we start funding that build out, there can be loan covenants that with direct help, working with the utilities, how that build out would move forward.
Okay. Gary?
Two questions, please. Gene, just to be clear, the demand of the build out, that's high density and medium density only, right? We're not talking about low density.
That's right. Then okay. In our mapping, we have hit on high, medium density.
Okay, and would you explain the sentence that says exclusive of certificate applicant models already developed? What does that mean?
I think it's just to highlight that this is an independent view. We have developed this mapping independent of what either of the utilities have suggested.
Is that Kirk's work?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So it's... Oh, all right. I understand. Okay. Thank you. So the independent model is AEA's model.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
And then...
I was going to say, for my benefit, maybe some of the board members and maybe the public, what's the definition of low density, medium density, and high density? Is it per square mile, residence per square mile, per block, per lineal feet? What's that definition?
We're going off a map that was produced by the local community that identified by their definition a high and medium density. I'm not sure off the top of my head exactly what matrix they used. I think they had, who was the engineering firm?
I don't recall the exact numbers, but it is residents per square mile. That's
okay. Do you mind getting that to us just so you have an idea what that, because a lot of decisions have been made based on that model, but I don't know what medium is.
Yeah, and then what Kirk said, just for the recorded record here, is it was Michael Baker that did that work, and it was based on a certain number of residences per square mile, I believe.
It was also correlated against the number of structures. So they did a residence structure analysis.
And when you say residence, it's people in the house or just houses? Single, are you assuming... assuming there's X amount of people per resident? Is that the assumption?
Right. They have a model that works on that. Right.
Okay.
But they also have just structures, because there are commercial structures.
Okay.
And so when we did the mock-up of what a pipe distribution system would be, we actually went right to the boundaries of the largest proposed service territory and then calculated the number of miles of pipe that were in the low-density area and subtracted that from the total.
Was there any study done by volume of heat, fuel oil used for structure? In other words, what they actually use versus the number of people in there, size of the buildings?
That is a key component. We have to go with some conclusions on sort of the average size of a residence in the single-family residence in the borough. We have revised down the amount of energy that they use on a yearly basis, utilizing some information from the existing provider and also some input that we have from fuel oil companies that deliver or are currently serving the need, because we don't want to overestimate either.
Okay.
And
so
then the final...
Gene, just quickly, for the chair, I believe when they come out with that six-year build-out, it will have an estimate of gas per section to end that based on the formula that changed.
Yeah, when you said structures per square mile or people per square mile, how do you relate it to volume per square mile? Just trying to connect the dots.
Yeah.
And the last bullet here is just, as the mayor mentioned, that at the local level, they are starting to talk about what they might do as far as government to government or within their individual governmental systems with regards to helping streamline the permitting for the potential stringing of pipe, placement of pipe in the community. This slide just highlights a couple of meetings that have taken place. We have participated in two of DEC, EPA, air quality public meetings. Those meetings are set up with the allowance for information tables to be set up. I was not able to participate in the first one, but we did have a presence there for the IEP project. I did participate in the second one, which took place out in the North Pole. It was a very good setup, lots of room for people to sit down, fill out the input cards for DEC, but then also come over to our information table. We produced a large map. It was either 3x4 or 4x5 that we had on an easel that attracted a lot of attention. I think people are automatically drawn to a map to see what's on the map. When they see it's a map of their area, they want to see where their household is. And so we were able to engage a lot of people in the discussion on not only what the project is, but how the proposed six-year build-out might take place. We were cautious, though, in not promising them that they would be in year one or year two, that we don't want to mislead them, that we hope to serve the whole area within that 6 years, but we are actually not going to be the entity actually laying the pipe that would be a utility. Also, you can see the presentation to the Alaska Public Facilities staff, again, to get an estimate on the public facilities within the Fairbanks Coast Guard Borough that would be able to avail themselves or currently avail themselves of natural gas. And again, also keeping an eye on which of those might maintain a dual fuel capability, because that could be very crucial in making sure that the community's needs are served in a true emergency situation. And then also, and we're expecting results of a survey that was done by IGU to be available to us sometime soon, and we're going to then match that up with focus groups that just recently took place in the community, where we were asking a number of similar questions, but with people who came to the meeting, a two-hour meeting, with specific information on what their fuel usage was for the previous year, and we were asking them a number of questions on trying to figure out the price sensitivity, if their conversion cost them X dollars, but they were able to save so much per year, how quickly would they convert? Actually preparing to take the IGU survey information a little bit further, just with a focus group, and that those focus groups took place last week. Did you have a question?
Oh, I was just looking at the conversion of the public office facilities, and that's with the Mary up with the build out, I assume, and also the conversion. Economic analysis, don't have the budget for that. And I don't know what fiscal year that would be in to convert those buildings, but would that be this fiscal 2014 for public facilities or next year 2015?
That actually is a very good question. It may be that there will be a request to the state, maybe in this next legislative session, for funds to prepare a number of those facilities. To hook up, debate over which ones it would make sense, or there might be an absolute need for them to maintain that dual fuel capability. How easily could they do that? Do they have room in the existing structure? A number of things there that we would be looking to refine that component now that we've engaged them in a conversation. And then the ADA ADA team did hire Cardno to do an investigation to help us with the conversions. They're working on refining a white paper on that, again, to look at potential conversion financing options that would be attractive to consumers in the Fairbanks North Borough. The delivery of energy is a volume enterprise, and we are very interested in having as many customers as quickly as possible. We're doing analysis on the expected conversion rates. We have started with looking at as the resources is initially made available to, say, a subdivision, what percentage of the homes would convert that first year that they have access? How many of them want to see how it goes for their neighbor before they make that that conversion? And I can tell you in the focus groups, we had some discussion because the focus group, unlike a telephone survey, allows neighbors to have conversations about how they're going to evaluate that. And in the I did sit in all those focus groups, and in one of them in particular, one of the participants said, well, they're a little bit leery of this new resource, natural gas. They know how fuel oil is handled in their own residence, but natural gas is a new creature, and so they might hold back a year or two and just see exactly what costs their neighbor incurred in the conversion, what savings their neighbor had in the first year before they actually make that that jump. Are there things that we can do with incentives that would incent that person to not wait that year or two but sign up that first year? The focus groups and the IGU survey is structured so we can get to that, and then also find out what elements of the conversion assistance program are more attractive to the individual. You might think that, in fact, I think the focus group indicated that if people have the cash resources to do it and not have to take out any kind of a loan, they're likely to do that. Just cash fund it, recoup those costs in 3 to 4 years, whatever the individual conversion is, and get the savings beyond that. However, there are a number of consumers that just don't have the cash resources to do that. And I think when we do a comparison to the Alaska Housing Finance Energy Rebate Program, a number of people went through the initial audit, but then when it actually came to them having to lay cash out to make the improvements to their house and then get a rebate, HFC didn't get quite the follow-through in the conversions as they initially expected, and I think that's just because of that initial cash outlay component. So we're evaluating programs that have been used in other states where the individual homeowner was able to go through, move forward with the conversion, not have a large cash outlay initially, and that seemed to actually incent them to move forward. So we're evaluating those programs to see which ones are the most meaningful to the consumer, and what do we currently have as far as programs that we might be able to knit together, or do we need to go to the legislature and talk to them about creation of a new program completely?
Gene, there are two specific programs I know about at HFC now. I was going to wait until the next slide where we talk about that, but I hope you're in constant conversations with HFC about the second loan for energy efficiency and the performance contract in the public facilities and the work they've done to make those conversions through. But the chairman's question is actually a very good one. If the fiscal year runs July 2015 to June 30, 2016 in this next budget cycle, those may be the actual opportunities to do public facilities.
Yeah. We have had meetings with HFC to engage them directly. We've put together teams in both ADA and HFC to continue that conversation. That second mortgage, I think one of the problems with that is that the second mortgage is taken out by the homeowner. The homeowner then is personally liable to pay that back. We have found out that in the Fairbanks North Star Girl, you have quite a turnover in ownership. And so there's a question then, will the homeowner take on that loan, make a conversion of a residence, if they plan on leaving that residence sometime soon? Then again, we have looked at programs in the lower 48 where the obligation to pay that loan attaches to the structure itself. And so the new owner actually pays off the remainder of the loan. So it's a little bit of a utility structure where you want to make sure that as much as possible, the user of the infrastructure actually pays for it. And so if you can perhaps look at putting together a structure where the loan can be taken out, it attaches to either the utility meter or the actual residential structure itself. That was one of the things that the focus group indicated the residential owner is attracted to, and we're waiting to see if that that matches up with the IGE survey that was done.
Has anybody talked to the real estate appraisers as far as, other than the conversion cost of the homes, is there additional value gained to the homeowner by converting based on lower revenue, lower cost for the utilities? So if you had two identical structures, one wasn't gas, one was, were they add any value to the appraisal process of the home, other than the hard costs of conversion based on utility costs?
Right. We have had some conversations internally. We have not, to my knowledge, engaged with real estate appraisers in the Fairbanks-Burstall-Duro area. But some of the conversations that we've had are, does that raise the value of the homes that have converted, or does it lower the value of the homes in the subdivision that have not? I can tell you, and one of the focus groups that I participated in, we had two individuals that were there that also are property managers. One of them managed 100 different structures in the Fairbanks Burstall Borough, and so we had that conversation with them after we were done with the focus group, just engaged in a conversation about what their view, whether it would increase the value of the properties. And, of course, they were coming at it, and what recommendation would they make to the property owner, many of whom live out of state and rely on that property manager to make make investment decisions based on the advice of the
as you said, higher turnover homes in the borough, it may be advantageous to take a little hard look at that, because what you don't want to have happen is people expecting appraisals to be within a certain dollar amount and finding out that the home is worth less, or that would be the worst case scenario, obviously, what it would do versus the new conversion, what benefits they'd actually gain in the value of it, which would then promulgate people to convert faster.
Right.
And do we have any data about the conversion, what's going on at Horn, that we can apply to what's going on, we can apply to Fairbanks as far as conversion rates and what we're seeing there?
Mark can answer that, Chair.
Yeah, we do. Also, to answer your question on value, we haven't looked at Homer and Catchment City, but we will. But it may well be that the value of the homes is not affected by the inclusion of new equipment. It's rather the remediation of the oil tanks. Because an existing oil tank can only turn into a phase one environmental issue, and that can depress property values. If your tankage is of a certain size, you're allowed to cut the tank in half and fill it with sand, and it's considered remediated by law, and that creates a benefit to the homeowner.
I think back in my less days, looking at a storage tank, if I remember that, Gene, I think it's 500 gallons or less, or 1,000, you can just, which is most tanks and bird tanks would be that. I remember she didn't write.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. That's going to affect it. So we are looking, Homer and Catchment, and actually on the conversion rate, we've examined that. And we are told that the conversion rate in Homer itself is about 65% to gas, and the conversion rate in Catchment City, which is nearby, is about 80%. And then we've asked Cardinal to look at why those two differences occurred, but both of them are significant. They're both well over 50%.
Okay. Thank you.
Just an interesting thing to keep in mind there, though, in Homer, the individual properties were assessed a little over $3,000 for the distribution system that's being built out. So you might have a dynamic where the homeowner says, well, I'm already in for $3,000. I might as well get the benefit of the resource.
Yeah, technically, Homer did an LID, local improvement district, for the whole city with a loan from the borough.
Okay. Yeah. What that demonstrates is that cooperation between the local governments and the distribution systems tend to be effective. And that's something Cardinals also indicated in their national survey. So it's not unique to Homer.
And that soon we're passing this information. Will we pass this information on to Fairbanks and the Fairbanks North Salt Grove City Fairbanks?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Let's see, then the final bullet here. Yeah, we're looking at ways of reducing the upfront costs, of course. We have had the conversation with HFC, and the meetings are ongoing, so I guess we'll go to the next slide.
Could we, before we get off of that? Yeah, sure. So, Gene, as you know from our meeting a few weeks ago in Fairbanks, Assemblywoman Dodge and Assemblyman Davies were interested in the conversion, and he was here to testify today about that. So could we make sure that we tie those two in to what's happening? And whatever you can share, put them on the list so that they're right up to date. Could we do that, Mr. Chair? Thank you.
Chair, very quickly, Gary, Nick is in contact with Catherine and John.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
We got it on the conversion, the white paper that we're developing, the IGU survey, the focus group, you know, information from all three of these things should be available in the coming weeks. Here.
Now we'll switch to the truck analysis. We have had a report from Prologue. Prologue is a Canadian-based company that trucks LNG and analyzes LNG trucking in Canada. We picked them because they're not aligned with any of the current companies that might fit on this business, but they have a lot of experience, and they modeled out the cost to be in the range of about $5. That's using the existing regulations. And that's one reason we wanted to have a technical review of that in the future. We also were using LNG fuel trucks proposed, but we asked them what would occur if we continued diesel. And the costs might go up by about a dollar. We've also surveyed the engine companies, and we have the information here from Cummins, which allowed us to share it with you, which is they have the 12 liters available now, but they're going to 15 liters. That's important. Because of the haul road and the Attican Pass issue, the 15-liter would be probably, from my discussions with two of the trucking companies, would probably be optimal, but that's the other reason we're going to have a more detailed discussion. The larger engine is probably necessary. That would require, however, a mid-fuel endpoint. And we talked to Fairmont Natural Gas, which has built two fueling stations, and we've been told they cost about $1 million apiece, so they're actually less than we thought. They're not that expensive. And you could put, it would be technically feasible to put one on the road with storage.
Would that be someplace like Colford?
Mr. Chairman, I think that would probably be where I tend to put it, but I'd have to defer to the engineers who are working on it. But I think that's about right. From my experience driving that road, that's what I did. And then we've also checked on LNG trailers. There was a crunch a little bit ago when we started this, but now it's freed up. There are a lot of trailers available on the market. LNG is starting to come, so that the manufacturers are starting to produce more equipment, and those are available within a couple month time frame. So we don't look at it as an equipment crunch from that, which is good. And then we are working with the engine companies to see how they're coming on their plans.
Just a quick question. You gave us the $5 on trucking.
Yeah.
That's an unsubsidized $5.
Yeah.
It ranges all the way from $4.50 to $6, looking at LNG, best case scenario, to diesel is what we're...
And I asked you this question, what's your best guess? I mean, it obviously you're going to get model a range, but it said $5 is probably... Right. I mean, if you get an expert, you finally got to pin them down, at least from my experience being in court with people.
And we believe that the Charette, the chair, is instructed us to work on will help us really refine that number, bouncing it off actual trucking companies and DOT in that meeting.
Right. So as I said, we're planning this LNG trucking trip, which is a term for the public that just means a meeting that focuses on a technical aspect of a project. had to look that up. I didn't know that.
I'm glad you explained it to us.
It comes from the Sorbonne in 1854, a corruption of the French word for a room of examination. So, anyway, we're planning that meeting as well. Engineers use that term all the time. I'm told Kirk taught it to me. We've got DOT lined up. We want to include them in the process. One question, of course, is we've modeled the current regulations, and the question is, would there need to be perhaps different regulations that's on the table? Key stakeholders would be the local trucking companies. They have been in contact. I think almost all of them have been in contact informally with Ada just to say they're interested. And the model we're using would each company that might truck gas, like Fairbanks Natural Gas or Golden Valley, the truck with their on their own. So that work we bid out and would produce hopefully a competitive rate. That would be the model.
Mark, are trucking companies are they all available to do this, or do they have to have specific licenses and approvals from DOT or eight or the federal highways to haul LNG? Is there any specific special carrier requirements?
That's a good question. As far as I know right now, the answer would be no. But if you change the configuration of trailers and wanted modifications of the regulations, then you might run into that. So that's one reason we thought, and the suggestion of having the chart was a very good idea, to go over all that technical data. Even though we've got a good model, now we need to work on the details. You always get into that. And so that's the purpose of this meeting.
Gary? Mark and Gene, on page 7 of the feasibility analysis, there's a table at the bottom, and it's a comparison of 7 different trailer configurations and a cost per M for each of those, and the delta was like double. And so would you ask them to focus on that, on that table, and see what it would take for us to get to the lowest cost price per M? And that's a hitch configuration and all that. And I'll just tell you that we haul bread, out of Beaverton every week, frozen bread. And we got into this 25 years ago. We went from a traditional hitch to a C hitch, increased our capacity 18% with the same truck. So personal experience tells me that somewhere in that table is a way to maximize the cost of that trucking, which is a huge component.
Yeah.
Right.
And so what does it take for us, either through legislation or through regulation or through policy, to be able to use that hitch on that road for this purpose? So could you ask them to focus on that?
Yeah, no, you're right, Mr. Wilkin. The pullout chart it gave us those options, and they modeled it on the existing regulations on the existing size trailer, which is a prudent, conservative thing to do. But that chart also should open up a dialogue because it does model the differences, and that's what we're going to try to do.
Thank you.
One other, just to jump in while we're talking about trucking, one other component is that we need to engage the trucking firms on. It's my understanding that if you're going to do maintenance on these vehicles and the trailers, enclosed maintenance, there's different air handling requirements for a shop that is doing work on LNG equipment. Because LNG is lighter than air, it would go to the ceiling if you had a leak, and so you need to have special air handling equipment to make sure that it's a safe situation.
Well, I would just make the comment that the trucking is, could be 40 or better percent of the whole project truck program, and I think it's very important. And I've requested it with staff that they really zoom in on that and unearth every stone they can and figure out a way, if there is, through regulation, through legislation, whatever we can do to be efficient with that. Given the constraints of the haul road and certain aspects of it nature just is, we can't really overcome.
And I would think that the trucking component is the component that leaves us most bare for catastrophe, for liability. That's the thing you can't model, but it's the thing that lurks in the background. So,
okay. So like, next to move to the LNG plant commercial process, and that's that process that you saw on the first slide that SB 23 is designed to find a private participant to go with the SB 23 funds to get the plant built. Not on the distribution side, I'm talking about the plant. And we are now then talking to three potential LNG plant participants that responded to a July request for offers. That's Pentex, which is the parent company of Fairmont Natural Gas, and Spectrum LNG, and then Golden Valley Electrical Association, which is working in conjunction with a equity participant. And so we're in the process of refining the potential terms of these potential participants, and we have had numerous exchanges of information and numerous in-person meetings with each group. So,
do we have a goal of what the price will be out of the plant improvement?
Well, actually, it's a good question. What we're trying to do is still model the burner tip price. So we're taking the cost of the gas. There's different contracts. We're taking what we think would be the OPEX of the plant. We're taking the prologue model, and we're trying to add that up with each participant and come up with about $15 of the burner tip. Now, it could be a little up or down, but we're trying to still, as Mr. Davies pointed out, we're still very interested in burner tip price. And so that's our model. That's our negotiation model. We've told each participant that we would like them to propose and work with us on a structure for their company that would achieve that goal, while also letting them have a rate of return.
But if I understand you, the 15 is the sum of everything.
It is the sum of everything.
And so the gas plant portion, is there a target number there?
Well, I think you know, we know essentially what it will cost to buy the fuel gas on the slope, and we know the trucking. We have the range that can be adjusted, and it's that those negotiations are focused on that range of adjustment.
Mark, you have a budget or a scenario that you've given the board that shows the different components of price to make up that $15. Is that readily available? Do you have that lesson?
I don't have
it. No. Okay, we can get
you that much.
Yeah,
we
will.
Okay, thanks.
So anyway, so the results of business terms will be presented to the board, and with each of the participants, and we're obviously probably there'll be a recommendation from the management, but we intend to. We'll have the board fully engaged in this process because this is an important project, and there's each participant, potential participant, has different offers on the table. And then if the board selects the best project offer, then there'll be a process negotiating a final business structure. And that occurred, for example, with the Endeavor jackup rate, be the same process. Some of you were here, some of you weren't, but even when we decided to move forward with that project, then we had to go through and develop the final documentation, and it took some time. So we'd think we'd be done sometime in December. That's the target.
Is the bullet number one, that's our November 19th meeting?
That would be that meeting, yes, sure. As now scheduled. To make sure we're on track, as we told you before, permitting is a necessary step in all these modern projects. It's essentially the building permit. If you don't have the permit, you're at grave risk when you put anything on the property. And we've identified the permits that are necessary. We have HDR, our contractor, working on the permits right now. And we will offer those permits to participants that want to make use of those permits. We're also issuing a request for proposals on a long lead time items and construction of the plant. That was finalized by the consultants at 5 o'clock on Friday and should go out shortly. And then our idea is to offer the permit and that RFP work to be transferred to the private entity that would develop the plant. That is, we would contribute that in. That would be paid for from the 57.5 sets appropriation. And if you recall, those are the monies that the legislature said that we didn't have to seek return on, so that those could be contributed without affecting the operating expense of the plant, which is an important goal, and that's what Mr. Wilson was referring to, is trying to keep that OPEX down. So that kind of contribution of the permitting side, there's quite a bit of money in that process. The very expensive permits would be a benefit to the consumer in Fairbanks. Did let you see the permit. We put up, we'll charge it all dense, but the reason for the density is the number of permits. The largest permit that we need is an AEDC large air permit, and that's anticipated to be received by the fall of 2014. That would be to cover the existing plant and expansion of the plant, because you have to seek a permit of the size that you may think you may use in the future, and not that plant is built. That is, you can't, you know, apply for a little permit and then ask for a big one. You have to tell the regulatory agencies what you think, so we're going for a full air permit so that this plant can be expanded, and that won't be a detriment. We are well underway on the Corps of Engineers Wetlands Section 404 permit. They've indicated that it can be a national permit. That's a different, more streamlined process, so that's underway, and that's good for the project. And then, as you can see, there's a lot of other work that's being done to make sure we're on track with all the potential locations for the plant. We sent a team in August to two pad sites to do archaeological work, which is required for the permitting process, and that has to be done before the snow settles. And so that work has been done on both sites, so that either site could be utilized for this project. And again, the list continues, so that when we say ADA is saying it will contribute to permitting work, it's not a de minimis amount of work. And it goes in without returning the business model we're proposing. And then again, we have finally the Gantt chart, which the board has seen several times, and we've got items completed and items underway. And I think basically we're still on track. The permitting process is going. We're well underway in discussions with the private party participants as specified by SB 23. And as Mr. Wilk indicated, the plan is to have a presentation to the board by November 19th. On that process, and then as we indicated, if the board wishes to make a selection at that time, then we think we could have final terms by December. And that is our conclusion of our presentation.
Thank you, Mark. Are there any comments or concerns from the board? All right. We'll close that IEP project update. Next on the agenda is our 2014 strategic planning work session schedule. I asked Ted and Sherry to poll the board about potential dates on that. Ted, can you tell us what the result of that was?
You bet, Chair. Based on what we can found out from the board, we would have the board regular meeting on the 14th, and then we would have the work session for a full day on the 15th.
Of January.
And that would work with staff. And it's also good timing because that's a week, I believe, before session starts. Commissioner Mike, the 21st, I believe. So we would recommend those two dates. And I believe board member Hughes couldn't be on the 14th, but he could be there for the work session. Is that? And I believe everyone else said that they could make both those dates.
So 8 AEA Tuesday and work session Wednesday?
That's what we're saying.
No.
Sherry, did you talk to AEA regarding those?
Sherry will move on the date, possible date.
And
but we have not confirmed.
Right.
Meeting.
So, I guess we need to.
We talk afterwards.
Right.
Rest of you all right with that?
Yeah.
Right. So again, Tuesday and Wednesday?
Tuesday and Wednesday would be the dates that AIDA right. can meet.
Yeah. All right. Okay. All right. And hopefully AIDA can work on it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And Chair, I would suggest that staff can work with you and with Russell on the agenda, and we can get that out in November and get feedback from what the board would like to see.
Yeah, I've looked for any board members, any suggestions, we'd sure appreciate input on that, yeah, including lunch, what you like for lunch.
And with the work session, Chair, would you want to have the work session here? Last time we had it down at the Cook's, depending on the board preference and whether they want to get out of the basement or not.
I would say maybe do a survey to see what's available for rooms.
Okay, we can do that. Do a survey of potential areas where we could have the work session.
Okay, that brings up item number C, executive session. I'll look for a motion.
So moved.
And Chair, we could have our attorney.
Can I just have one moment, Ted? Mr. Chair, I should entertain a motion to go into executive session. The motion should include all the topics that are going to be discussed. There are four items listed. First is HeliClean coal plan. My understanding is that's to discuss the status of litigation and negotiations. The second is the Interior Energy Project. That topic is to discuss confidential financial components of the plan. The third item is AIDA and AEA personnel guidelines. That is to discuss attorney-client privilege communications with respect to guidelines. And the fourth item is AIDA and AEA building. And that is confidential because the process of looking at a new building is still in the competitive procurement process, and therefore there's some discussions that need to be done confidentially. You can just ask for a motion to that effect and then move into executive session.
I'm not sure if I can make that motion, but you just said I make the motion I'm going
to. To that effect.
To that effect.
Motion to that effect. Thank you. Thank you.
And the next time we do this, we're going to have you come up first.
Yeah.
How do you like that, right?
Is there a second?
Second.